Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that is on a mission to make America think again. I'm your host, former United States Senator Michael D. Brown, and along with my amazing co-host, Liberty Jones, we're interviewing the people who are making it happen. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. We're not going to tell you how to feel. We're just going to put the information out there because it's what goes on in the shadow that really makes the world go round. So come listen and learn as we start our 12th year with an amazing lineup of movers and shakers. And tonight, one of my favorite local movers and shakers, Patrick Mera, former head of the Republican Party in the District of Columbia and a Republican National Committee member. And he's back on the show for the third or fourth time. He's a regular on the show, and we appreciate having his input because you have to know how both sides think and how everybody feels to really develop, I think, a perspective that's really worth having. So thanks for being with us again, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, let me start right at the top. Last time you were on the show, you said in May, you said that Republicans, you just come from the meeting of the Republican National Committee in Florida, and you said Republicans pretty much universally support the idea of shrinking the size of the federal government. So I want to ask you now, 4 or 5 months later, is this what you guys had in mind? Mass firings, dismantling of whole agencies like USAID? Do you think that we're going about it the right way, making government smaller?
Yeah. So this is the part where I have to say when you're breaking a few eggs when you're making change like this, to say the least, you're breaking a few eggs. And so look, I would say that sooner or later, whether it happened now or in the future, we are going to have to reduce the size of government. We do have a bit. We know we have a big, very big national debt. As you know, I think we're at $37 trillion, or whereabouts at this point. And I think it's just unsustainable to keep spending the way that we're spending. And so that, looking at the big picture, that's what I would say.
Well, given that's your opinion, let me ask you about Donald Trump, though. Is this a man that cares about our deficit when he's spending tens of millions of dollars on having a parade that nobody's going to come and see, that nobody came and saw, really? Is that, I mean, those things don't seem to go together as far as I'm concerned. How do you feel about that? Aren't we wasting money right and left?
Well, it was the, it was the 250th of the Army. And we are, as you know, we're coming up on the 250th celebration of America. And so I anticipate that we will be spending more on that since it only happens once. And in this case, in 250 years, I was barely one when we celebrated the 200th. And so therefore, I think in the case of the 250th, I think, money will be spent to celebrate America and America's armed forces.
Well, and I hate to bring this up, but it was also his birthday. And this is the 250th anniversary of the Marine Corps. And it was also the 250th anniversary of the Navy. And I don't think we're going to be celebrating either one of those in the same fashion that we celebrated the 250th anniversary of the Army. But go ahead, Liberty, ask something brilliant.
So, that is a very big issue that we have right now. The national debt is only rising. My question to you is, obviously, this is an issue of great importance, but, Republicans, they're usually known for cutting taxes, calling for spending cuts. Cutting taxes does reduce revenue. And then we're cutting on spending for things like healthcare subsidies. So how do you think that's going to affect the people and help with national debt? if we're kind of counteracting with those two decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to be honest, I would have to see the specific proposal. Obviously, living in the District of Columbia, you hear about these things. You tend to hear about these things a little bit more from time to time. But I would have to take a look at the specific proposal. At this point in time, as far as I know, while that's been discussed, it hasn't actually been done to this point.
What hasn't been done?
I think you're talking about CR. The potential government shutdown, that type of, is that what you're referring to?
Well, in terms of spending cuts, there have been many, many that I could refer to.
Sure. Yeah. No. And I think, I mean, look, that is the nature of the Republican Party. We do believe in reducing spending. We do believe that people should be paying less in taxes. We believe the government should be smaller.
Well, let me ask you, Patrick, given that we want to see a smaller government, do we really, I mean, you talk about eggs breaking, but when you get rid of an agency like USAID, is that really, you're obliterating some of these things. You obliterated the said agency. Is that really the right approach? Or should you go in and try to, work from within to make a better system, make a more efficient system?
Yeah, I mean, so look, I would say, given the part of the issue when you're cutting the size of government, and I think we all kind of saw this cycle, and I referred to this a little bit last time. I think the worst case scenario in this situation is that there is data with regard to cutting of the government when we really need to do it down the road, because I do think at a certain point, it just gets awfully unrealistic. I had read some stats today that in a book that on the previous election that indicated that, for example, 24% of the USAID office space was vacant, which I know that that's not the only thing that was cut at USAID, but there's just a lot of waste generally in the federal government, and it is very difficult over the course of 4 years to just methodically, chip away at it, especially when you have, any congressional stakeholder, even the most fiscally conservative, they may have a pet program at USAID. So I think what happened here is that it was just the ripping of the band-aid off very swiftly, as opposed to just, lightly doing something here and lightly doing something there, that quite frankly would just be brought back in 4 years or 8 years or 12 years.
Let me ask you, this is something that really bothers me, and I hate to ask you this question because I really like you, and I think this is a very tough question, but explain to me how, without due process, and without any charges, blowing up a boat full of Venezuelans, why isn't that murder? We're not at war with these people. They're not enemy combatants, okay? They were never charged. If a police officer walked up on the street and saw me selling fentanyl and pulled out a gun and shot me, he would be on trial for murder without arresting me, charging me. So how is this different?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, and he made no secret about it. I mean, President Trump is going after the cartels. He's going after drugs. He's going after those who bring fentanyl into our country. I mean, lots of people are dying because of fentanyl. And so I don't know. I know as much as you know about the boats. And I think in the coming years, we will, there will be a thorough examination of what happened there. But it's, as he noted in the campaign, and he said since then, he is very aggressive about going after the cartels and going after those who import, smuggle fentanyl into our country.
Well, I get that, Patrick, and I really like you. So let me just say, you got to be
Sure.
crazy if you think that a bunch of people in a motorboat wouldn't have surrendered to a Navy destroyer. I've actually been up close to a Navy destroyer. They're really awesome looking. And if I was in a motorboat and some guy said to me, "Give up," I think I'd give up. But anyway, Liberty, go ask a nicer question.
Obviously we all want the same things, and we believe a lot of similar foundations for our country, right? Even though we want to go about it differently, I respect a lot of Republican values. I want to say that. And I really respect the career you've built. You have a lot of involvement here in DC. That's really beautiful, and you've built this career, I would say, with the perspective of supporting civil rights, education, and solutions, right? I don't really feel that Donald Trump, who is convicted of felonies, tried to overturn an election, often undermines many norms of democracy. Do you not worry that by standing under the same banner as him, you own some of that credibility and the responsibility of the future of a more moderate GOP? Because these actions are very threatening to the democracy of our country, in my opinion, and I'm sure you must agree.
Well, so I would disagree a little bit, and so this kind of goes to what I mentioned last time about the news consumption. I think that depending on what you read and what you view, and look, I consume a diversity of media, but when you're analyzing President Trump, number one, President Trump, it's no secret he speaks in extremes, right? And that's like, I don't think anyone will argue with that. But he will say something that's all the way over here, but in the end, he just wants to get somewhere in the middle, typically. And look, you saw this with the, quite frankly, you saw this with the platform at the Republican National Convention, that he really winnowed it down. He himself actually drafted, this is like, talking with the campaign manager and talking with the chairman of the RNC, he drafted out a lot of the Republican platform, for example. He took out a lot of extras, a lot of things that we just don't need to focus on. And so if you look at, kind of President, or not kind of, what President Trump is emphasizing, and you alluded to some of this before, Senator, but with the fentanyl, he is obsessed, and I would say, frankly, it's a good obsession to oppose fentanyl coming into our nation. And I think, obviously, I think we could all agree upon that. But then, where we might disagree is method, methods used. And so, for example, when you shut down the border, you reduce the flow of anything coming into the country that may be illegal, whether that's a person or a drug or a gun or whatever. But so, look, I would say that, some of this here is, look, we're all kind of, in a way, we're all kind of looking at this from different angles, depending on what political party we're in. And, it is no secret that, for example, with DC even, the week after the election, I went on, the local NBC affiliate, and I said, "Look, I think the one thing that they might focus on is beautifying is beautification of DC and public safety." because that's, this is, it's really no secret. And so a lot of these things just are not really a surprise to me, because it was just discussed so much. And since he had, kind of a swing or a bite at the apple, I guess you could say, in the first 4 years, he's had time to refocus. And I know that also his, his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, is really keeping him more on track. So,
well, let me just say, Patrick, that when you mentioned the District of Columbia, talking about beautifying the District of Columbia is like giving, from the Trump administration, is like giving roses to your girlfriend after you beat her up, because that's what they do to Washington every day, right? And we don't care about them beautifying America. Give us a voice. But this is a problem that I have, and our Republicans are doing it right now, Patrick. And I, as a Democrat, I don't pretend to be more noble than the Republicans. I'm not. But, last time you were on the show, you compared us going down rabbit holes, which we both do. But you compared social media to Carolyn Leavitt. There's a difference when the press secretary stands up there and says ridiculous falsehoods, and people do it on social media. I mean, I'm not running the country, and I'm, if I say something on social media, but I think, let me ask your opinion of this. I truly believe, as someone that spent a long time as a salesman, that Carolyn Leavitt doesn't see her job as telling the truth. She sees her job as representing the best interests of Donald Trump. The same way as if you would come in and buy a car from me, and I wouldn't want to discuss with you whether I thought a BMW was better than a Chevrolet, even if that's what I believed. Because if I was selling a Chevrolet, I saw it as my job just to push the Chevrolet. And that's all I see in Carolyn Leavitt. I don't think you can believe any word that comes out of that woman's mouth. And I believe it's because she just feels her job is to paint the president in the best light she possibly can. Do you think that's overreaching on my part? Is that too critical?
I mean, to be honest, I think she's doing the job that any press secretary does. It's a combination of getting information out to the media, but also you are, in a sense, you are an advocate for the policies of the president. Her predecessor, in the Biden administration, her immediate predecessor, she wasn't always the most, the most truthful, so to speak. But look, I think, press secretaries, White House press secretaries, they're a very difficult job, because obviously policy, the issues, just constantly moving. The questions from reporters, constantly going in different directions. And so, look, I think she's doing a good job, and she's frankly doing what she's supposed to do as the White House press secretary.
Well, she's doing an amazing job, in my opinion. But I don't agree about how she goes with it. And there's a difference. You understand, Patrick, because you've run for political office. There's a thing between plausible deniability and just an outright lie. And I think she outright lies. Go ahead. Ask a nicer question. Go ahead, Liberty. You're the nicer one. You're the good cop, Liberty. Go ahead.
Okay. So do you think that if Democrats held up with the same record as Trump, that Republicans wouldn't call it corrupt and dangerous?
I think, politics is politics. So I think, if President Trump, here's kind of the issue that we have now. If President Trump, came forward with a cure for cancer, suddenly the Democrats would like cancer. Conversely, a similar thing might happen with a Democrat president, right? So it's just the nature of the beast. It's politics. But
Okay.
that's
true. But I think saying we're not, you're mean too, really doesn't answer the question. But let me ask you about the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Are we weaponizing the Justice Department? I mean, this guy is going after his enemies. Now, I know everybody sings, every Republican out there saying, oh, the Justice Department was so weaponized against him. It went after him more than anybody. Didn't go after him any more than went after Bill Clinton, Christ sakes, and the media and everybody else. But the point is, we didn't go after Lindsey Graham. We didn't go after Ted Cruz. We didn't go after every person on Fox News that said such horrible things about Joe Biden, a man who served his country faithfully for a very long time, whether you think he was senile or not. We didn't go after any of those people. And that's who this guy's going after. He's going after people that disagree with him. He went after Jimmy Kimmel. He's gone after Taylor Swift, Bruce Springsteen, And is it okay, Patrick, for him to stand out there? We all kind of roll our eyes. Everybody in the Republican Party goes, well, that's just Donald Trump. He likes to go to extremes. He's the damn president of the United States. When Charlie Crist's widow stood up there and said, I forgive the man that shot murdered my husband, which was one of the most Christian things I've ever seen anybody do. She could barely get the words out if you watched her. And then he turns right around and says, I hate my enemies. I am your retribution. He says that at a Christian service. I've got news for you, buddy. Christ said, I am your retribution. I'm not, he didn't say, I am your retribution. He said, I am your salvation. So don't you think his rhetoric, his poison rhetoric, is ramping all this stuff up? We just had another mass shooting today. We just had another person killed and several wounded in a church of all places. But don't you think his harsh rhetoric, it's not just him, like, oh, that's just the way he talks. Like I explained my grandmother when she says something, embarrassing. It's not just the way he talks. He really sets the tone, does he not? He's the president of the United States.
President Trump is filled with asterisks here in terms of that nobody else will be able to do and act the same way, right? Remember in 2015, 2016, I can't even remember the years now, but remember he kept going after Rosie O'Donnell, and we were all, frankly, everybody was shocked by it, right? Okay, that's pretty quaint now. So what I would say is, even with what he said at the service for the late Charlie Kirk, that's the thing with President Trump. It doesn't really. That is who he genuinely is, right? He is not going to apologize to his enemies, right? That might not be the way that the three of us are. We might try to be more like the Charlie Kirk's widow, but this is who he is, right? If he got up there and said, if he said the same thing that she said about the enemies and the kids, none of us would believe it. And look, that's what I would say. If no matter what he says, he's being the genuine Donald Trump.
Well, the problem with this Republican excuse, though, as far as I see it, Patrick, they said the same thing when he said, I grab women by the pussy. There were people out there that said, oh, guys talk like that in the locker room. People said to me, you never heard a guy say something like that in the locker room? Yes, I have heard guys say things like that in the locker room, and I wouldn't vote for any of them for president. And that really is the point. He's the president. And to say something that foolish, that insensitive, and I got to add that stupid because he said it to a gossip reporter. He didn't say it to just any reporter. He said it to a guy who's a gossip reporter and then was shocked that the news got out there. I don't think we need to beat this anymore into the ground, but I just have to say, She's the president of the United States. We can't just laugh this stuff
Yeah,
off
no,
because language
I
matters.
understand, and I understand that. But that, remember, that was not to, I'm not defending the language or the expression, but you know, a couple things there. It was a hot mic, and so he didn't know that he was being recorded. But then the second thing I'd say, it was well before he was running for president.
Well, you know what, Patrick? I never said anything. I never. There were certain things I didn't say in politics when I was
No, I'm
elected.
not going to win this argument here.
Well, no, I know. But I'm just saying, I didn't say, Joe Biden didn't say certain things because it was beneath him. Shouldn't there be some things that are beneath the President of the United States? Shouldn't there be some decorum or, standard that he should reach, that if he talks like an adolescent who's in a locker room, we just go, oh, Jim.
Yeah, but this is, I mean,
Well,
remember, this is these rallies and things that people, you know, a lot of people on the left thought were comical. I mean, he used those to win, really. And the language he uses at those is not, you know, it's frankly, I don't say it's more, you know, it's definitely not the language of a billionaire. It's you know, language, it's different language to relate to the typical, you know, the average voter who's showing up to rally.
yeah, unfortunately, it's the language of a fascist, not a billionaire. Go ahead, Liberty.
Yeah, he's definitely, we're not in fascist territory yet.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that when you're deporting people that are innocent, and when you're putting people in the middle of Everglades, when you're blowing up people in boats, when you're, I don't think we're that far from it, really. Where this is the direct, they hung posters of him. They hung posters of him on the side of buildings. That's what they did to the Kaiser. That's what they, Mussolini did that. I don't know how it's different, Patrick. I really don't. Go ahead, Liberty. Save Patrick, because he and I are about to get into an argument, and I don't want to argue with him because he's a good guy.
So I read about you online that you have some great ideas. You know, you supported same-sex marriage and education reform. That's correct, right? And you know, a lot of the positions that don't align neatly with Trump's agenda. Do you feel like your own work is being erased by his dominance of the GOP?
No, well, on those two issues, I would say, I mean, look, he supports education reform. He supports public charter schools. He supports school choice. So that's, you know, fairly aligned. But on the issue of marriage, he took out, so this goes back to the platform, he actually himself removed the language that was in the Republican platform that opposed same-sex marriage. So now that could change when there's a new nominee in 4 years, but he actually did that. It just was not covered in the media because it was actually quite funny because media and you know a couple of people called me and one in particular said, "Are you sure this is it? It's really not that bad," in reference to the platform. And so this is not, it's just not an area that he is going to focus on.
Okay, so
You know,
my
leave him alone.
education in my university, the laws department was cut of $700 million. And in Florida, we have kids who are not allowed to say the word gay and who can't learn about slavery. Do you constitute
So
that as education reform?
that's state level. The unique thing about America is that most of our education is state level policy. So there's things like education and math that you might have common standards across states, and that they form. But in these other areas, the states decide. That's why you have the boards of education and the individual states and municipalities. Where the basically in the U.S., education is the it's the government that governs closest to the people, with the board of education. And so those things are decided at the extreme micro level. And that wouldn't happen in DC because even a Republican who's elected wouldn't really touch that stuff.
Well, given that, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead, Liberty.
Well, that's interesting because Marco Rubio is the Secretary of State, and he was a really important part of the Floridian government. So it does kind of correlate, even though it's state politics.
Well, he was a senator. He didn't have any, well, he didn't have, he may have agreed or disagreed, he probably agreed, or at least publicly agreed, because that was what the local governments were doing. But education is hyper local in the United States, which is also why when you talk about getting rid of the Department of Education, it's not like in other countries where the Department of Education actually does education for the whole, and I get there's the niches, but education is primarily a state and local policy matter in the U.S. So it's the things that you're concerned with in Florida, it was all decided by those local officials up to your the Florida State Board of Education.
Well, I agree, Patrick, that getting rid of the Department of Education is nothing new. There has been a strong element within inside the Republican Party that's wanted to do this for years. But let me ask you, doesn't it concern you that everybody in the education business is against this? The American Federation of Teachers, the NEA, the college professors, a National Association of Deans, and everybody in the education field is against this. So doesn't it give you pause that we're going to get rid of the Department of Education that doesn't do anything, but all these people want to support it? What do you think? That this is just their sacred cow and they don't want to see it slaughtered?
No, so with you reference the NEA and the AFT are the two big education unions. So they're even a reform-minded Democrat doesn't like the NEA and the AFT. So they're not, your average, your most liberal elected Republican to president is really not going to pay attention to the NEA and the AFT. But with that said, with college professors, some of these things, if you do dismantle the Department of Education, first it's higher ed funding. That's a different thing. So that's basically a rearranging of the deck chairs, so to speak. And so that would probably
But
go more to labor or something like that.
where you may be absolutely right that the Democratic president wouldn't listen any more to the NEA and the AFT, although I don't think that's true. I think they have a lot more influence with the Democrats.
They would.
But
They would.
even if they didn't, you guys are always saying that Donald Trump gets to do what he wants because the American people elected him. Well, I can tell you that American presidents and whether Republican or Democrat may not like the AFT and the NEA, but America loves them. America loves teachers. They love teachers. They
Well,
always
America loves
rate
teachers, but
teachers
that
very
doesn't mean
high.
they're a teachers' union.
Well, but I mean, doesn't it the fact that they're so popular and they all belong to this union? Look, you guys all went out. The thing that horrified me most in the election as a former Teamster was to see the head of my union support this man. But y'all embraced the Teamsters union when they did it. I mean, I know the Republican Party has never been the party of the union. They during election
But
year they
sometimes the
fought
party of
again.
the Teamsters, though.
I'm sorry.
Sometimes
Yeah.
the party of the Denver Reagan did okay with the Teamsters, too.
Yeah, he did, but they didn't endorse him. And you know what?
But on the
That may
Republican
be
side,
true.
a non-endorsement's an endorsement. You know how it is.
Yeah, well, yeah, I do know how it is, but this Well, let me put the question to you this way. The first time you were on the show, you said we've only been in there five months. So this is not a good time to make judgments on certain things. Now we've been in there almost another 5 months. Give me a report card. How are we doing? If Trump was taking a class on American politics from you, what would he get? Would he get a 80? Would he get a 95? Would he get a 62? Or would he get be down in the 50s where the American people have?
Well, I'm chairman of a state Republican Party, so I got to give him an A plus. But getting back to the,
Wait a second, though, Patrick. You never agreed with the Republican Party about statehood. You're always a statehood advocate.
Well,
right?
Because of the public safety issue has just destroyed statehood here in D.C.
We don't have a public safety problem in D.C.
No,
what are you
talking
about? Crime's going down. No,
this is what you're missing. This is what everybody.
You're talking about media. That's media. The crime's been going down in District Columbia. You know that. You know? The National Guard, when we went out to find them, were spreading mulch. They won't happen anyway.
Look, I've talked to dozens of Republican members of Congress in this year alone. So, like, probably 40 plus at this point. And the only thing they want to talk about is public safety. Why do they want to talk about public safety? Because a staff person, because of their spouse, because the issue that we have here, this is unlike any other time in the history of D.C. Look, I would take 11 grainy videos of the late Marion Barry in a hotel room over the public safety issue. This is going to haunt us for years to come. And because the issue here is that all of these Republican members, and frankly, a bunch of the Democrat members, if you saw that in some of the votes that were taken last week, they feel that they are truly impacted by public safety in D.C. They even tell their constituents to stay in hotels in Virginia. That's literally part of their guidance now, is to stay in Virginia. In D.C. It's too dangerous.
Because they make hay out of them. They scare people with it. It's the oldest political canard in the world. And politicians are the most pusillanimous people on the planet. They will stand behind anything they think that's going to get them votes. And they think this is going to get them votes. Now, look, I think you're a great guy and you work really hard. But I remember D.C. having 800 murders. 800 murders, Patrick, in 1 year. We don't have 15% of that today. You know? So crime isn't going up. It's going down. I'm sorry?
The issue here is that we have been – it's the people who have been impacted by this, it's not – you know, it's not targeted anymore. It's random. And so that I would say is it's not some drug crime. It's not some, some gang thing. It's regular people who have been impacted by crime. And I'd say that's the biggest.
By regular people, not by criminals, by regular people. You know, my favorite NRA canard is that if you take guns away from law-abiding citizens, only criminals would have guns. I think that's a hell of an idea. I think only criminals should have guns. Because when somebody holds me up, they're not interested in shooting me. But it's the good, honest, solid citizens of America that walk into schools and murder children. The guy in Uvalde, Texas, had no criminal background. The guy that shot the president had no criminal background. The guy that shot Charlie Kirk has no critical background. The coward that shot the man on the back of the in the back has no criminal background. None of these guys are criminal. So, you know, yes, violence has had a desperate impact, but it's because of the people on the right, the Republican Party and the NRA, that refuses to take guns out of people's hands. We need gun control is not the total answer, but it certainly is part of it. I'm sorry, go ahead. I went off on a tirade.
Yeah, that's okay. The issue here is that, look, a lot of this crime, too, has been committed by juvenile. When a juvenile is holding an illegal gun at your head and they virtually have no consequences for shooting your head off, I would argue that's a little bit. I mean, look, we lost our, I think I mentioned last time, we lost our general counsel, Mike Gill, was murdered, made national news in a daylight carjacking when he's taking his wife out of town. Yeah, horrible.
It was a horrible crime. And you know what? I wouldn't argue that point with you that when a kid has a gun, it's a dangerous thing. But I just point out to you, because of the Republicans in Texas, the boy at the Uvalde shooting had an automatic weapon because he wasn't old enough to buy a handgun. He tried to buy a handgun, but he couldn't. But the idiot lawmakers, I'm sorry, in Texas have a law that says you can buy an AR-15 rifle at 16, but you can't buy a handgun. Our laws are messed up as far as that goes. But anyway, now I'm getting off the subject. Save me once again.
Well, I have a different topic for you. So I'm sure you've heard of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland resident who was actually a Navy veteran who was wrongfully deported to El Salvador despite a court order protecting him, and only returned after the Supreme Court intervened. So he is the minority of even being able to return. So if protecting civil rights, human rights for Americans and due process came into conflict with supporting Trump's immigration policies, would you still choose to be more loyal towards Trump than your own morality?
So this is a good example of the, kind of also where we're at with media as well. Look, that individual in conservative media is also known as a wife beater and former MS-13 gang member. And that is like, the White House has not let up on that. So I suspect that there is something there with regard to domestic violence and potential gang involvement. But for whatever reason, both sides have really, have really doubled and tripled down on this. But that's the, you've watched conservative media. He's a wife beater, MS-13 gang member. You watch liberal media. He's a family man, having a Pepsi or a coffee or whatever with Chris Van Hollen. So it's, again.
Well, that's what the Republicans said about him. That's what the Republicans first said about him. They said, we made a mistake. We sent the wrong guy out the country. Then once it became a news story, all of a sudden he was a white beater and a, but if he was a white beater and an MS-13 gang member, it's very clear from all the media coverage that they did not know that before they deported him. They only found that out, if it's true, after the fact. I'm sorry, Liberty, I interrupted you.
And also, the Supreme Court is mostly conservative, and they were the one who brought him back.
Well, I mean, look, it's not with regard to specific law, like, and this is the thing, especially when you talk about, potential lawfare, you still have the courts. So, look, President Trump could say something or act or move to do something, but you still have the courts who may or may not intervene at times. And so if they're not doing everything that is by the letter of the law.
Well, I mean, that's fine, Patrick, but, isn't this a little bit like saying, hey, look, you're something robbing liquor stores, and we think you ought to do something about it. And you're saying, well, the police are out there, that doesn't seem to me to be a good defense to say the courts will, if he goes crazy, the courts will stop him. Let's maybe keep him from going crazy. We're starting to run out of time here. I'm sure that's okay with you. You've been incredibly brave. Come on, knowing the way I feel about this man, I think You know, we had a guy on last week, Patrick, who was the one of Charlie Crist's I'm sorry, one of Charlie Kirk's organizers, right? So I know it's not easy, but you know, and I want to tell you a quick story. I hope this makes you feel better. But one of the great honors I got as your senator was I got to take my Harley Davidson and bring in the last group of Rolling Thunder that came into Washington. And they let me speak, Patrick. I was the only politician they let me speak. But the guy that introduced me stood up and said, "Who hates Chuck Schumer?" And the crowd went, "Yeah, we hate him." "Who hates Nancy Pelosi?" And they all went, "Yeah, we hate her." And they said, "Who loves Donald Trump?" And they all went, "Trump, Trump, Trump, Trump." And then they said, "And now we'll hear from the Democratic senator from the District of Columbia." So I know exactly how you feel. It's hard to, you know, and I said, "Should I steal it up on stage or should I just run away?" I'm not sure. Luckily, I was talking to veterans, so they were polite. And I hope we've been polite with you, because I really admire you for coming on the show. You know how we feel. But what do you want to say, Patrick, that we haven't asked you? Is there anything that you want to say, either in defense of your party or your president, or...
Hey, look, I'm more interested in what happens with the funding of the government in the coming weeks. You know, what they do there. Yeah, I hope one day they return to like normal order, and we actually have, you know, we have funding bills, we have regular, you know, appropriations bills again, and all that. I mean, that, to be honest, that's what I'm. That, at this point in time, that's what I'm most focused on. Is the federal government, because that's to be honest with you, that's what everyone will be talking to me about in the coming weeks anyhow.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And as if for people that don't know, you know, we're always in the District of Columbia subjected to horrible things that happen during budget season. And in fact, it's only been a few years now since our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, got a law passed that the district no longer has to close down when the federal government closes down. We used to be required to close down as a wholly owned subsidiary of the federal government. But since I brought the subject up, and before I let Liberty ask the last question, let me ask you, what do you think about our delegate? People are lining up to run against her, Patrick, right and left. Are there any Republicans that are looking to do that? Maybe you, for example, you've got a lot of experience. Are there any Republicans looking to... The rumor out there, by the way, is that she's not going to run. But if she does, you know, plenty of Democrats are already lining up to take a shot at her. How are feelings on the Republican, local Republican Party? Anybody going to be that brave, you think?
We'll have at least one candidate in the primary. I don't know, you know, I don't know if we could have others. I just, you know, our party plans are not due at the Board of Elections till mid-December. And so, yeah. Frankly, the Board of Elections can't do anything until that point. So, you know, I would say we're going to definitely have one candidate. I don't know. We could have multiple candidates in a primary, though, but we'll have to see.
Will Patrick Maher be one of them?
No, you know how it is. I got youngish kids. So yeah, my running for office days are at least, you know, 5 or 6 years away.
Yeah, wait until they're teenagers, because then you can embarrass them. They hate it when you get up and speak publicly and things like that. So
yeah.
I would say wait until they're like 13 or 14 years old and they want to climb under the table every time you stand up at a meeting. Liberty, leave Patrick with something. Give him a farewell.
So, Patrick, thank you so much for coming on. And I have to thank you also, because if I didn't hear opinions and voices like yours, I wouldn't be able to grow my own perspective.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure, Patrick. Thank you. Yeah, you know, you got to give it to him, Liberty, for being brave enough to come on and face us. But, you know, I want to just run this question by you. Is it just me, or does it seem like all they do is avoid the tough question? All they do is say, well, that's the way he is, or oh, it doesn't mean anything, or really?
Absolutely.
I mean, Joe Biden would not offer the meeting, and it would be like, oh, he's got to go to the he's got the courage. This guy says the most horrible things, doesn't he? Wasn't that thing he said at Charlie Kirk's funeral, wasn't that horrible that I hate my, after what his wife said?
Yeah. It's terrible.
I know you, Liberty, and I know that if a friend of yours did that, you'd walk up to him afterwards and say, what the hell was that? Right? Any yeah. decent person would say, yeah, why would you say something like that?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I'm starting to notice it's a reoccurring theme that a lot of Republicans right now think it's a lot easier to shift blame and avoid real tasks than actually address what is being asked for by the people. And that's okay, but I want better.
Wow, that is a great way to end the show. And for all you out there listening, that just came from maybe the brightest young woman in America. So take heed, and we'll see you next week. And this is this song goes out to Patrick and all of us. Here's Come Together by the Beatles. Let's come together.